Please be seated. Holly Neer wrote that song on the bus on her way to the memorial, the vigil after Harvey Milk was killed in San Francisco. We are a gentle, loving people. Our first reading is from Ijeoma Oluo. She's a writer for The Stranger and The Establishment in Seattle, two different newspapers, and I've been finding her writing on the subject of white supremacy to be particularly useful over the last year. If you're looking for more information and more resources, as I know many of you are, I would point you towards her. You can Google her name and read the articles she has written. Here's excerpts from a column she wrote this week. Hello, fellow outraged human being. I am sure that the events of these last few days, the marching of young white supremacists through the UVA campus, the assault and murder of anti-racist protesters, has left many of you shocked and horrified. Violent white supremacy is a shocking thing to see in action, and all white supremacy is violent. If you are one of the many who are now saying, this has gone too far, what can I do? If you have the strong suspicion that counter marches aren't quite enough, but you don't know where to take it from there, I'm here to help. Here are some things you may need to know first. White supremacy is not just about the hateful actions of individuals or groups of individuals. White supremacy is in our workplace, our school system, our government, and our prisons. It is in our books and movies and television. White supremacy has been woven into the fabric of our nation from the moment that white settlers decided that their claim to land was more important than the lives of indigenous people. This is not a new problem. This is America. White supremacy is not as simple as a group of marching angry white people. White supremacy is literally the air that we breathe, so it seems daunting, hopeless even, doesn't it? But in fact, the opposite is true. You can spend the rest of your life fighting to win over the hearts of white supremacists one at a time, and if you won over one a week even, you would at the end of your life have not made a measurable dent in white supremacy. But systems can change. There are countless opportunities every day to disrupt white supremacy, especially if you are white. You can disrupt it in education, the workplace, where you spend your money, how you vote, and how you raise your children, and how you talk to people in the world. Those of us targeted by white supremacy do not get a moment's rest. And if you are not targeted by white supremacy, that should keep you up nights as well. Do not give up. Do not rest until the system of white supremacy is reduced to rubble. You may not see it in your lifetime, but your efforts will help ensure that many more of us will live long enough to do our part. The second reading is a poem by Audre Lorde entitled, Who Said It Was Simple? There are so many roots to the tree of anger that sometimes the branches shatter before they bear. Sitting in Nidix, the women rally before they march, discussing the problematic girls they hire to make them free. An almost white counterman passes a waiting brother to serve them first, and the ladies neither notice nor reject the slighter pleasures of their slavery. But I, who am bound by my mirror as well as my bed, see causes in color as well as sex, and sit here wondering, which of me will survive all these liberations? I invite you into a time of silence. A lot of words, sometimes those are useful. But in the midst of all the information and the to-doing and the what is next and the daily life, just take a moment to be still. To breathe, feel your heart beat, hear the breath of others, and let the spirit known by many names flow in and among you. Great Spirit of life and love, be with us this day and every day. Amen.
Thank you.
There is an apocryphal story about a new preacher who comes to town. And the congregation is excited to have her come, and they hear great things about her, and they come to the first Sunday, and she preaches this sermon, and it is awesome. It's really good, and everyone is like, wow, that's so amazing, and they invite all their friends. We got this new preacher, and she's fabulous, and the next week the place is even more full, because they all want to hear what else she has to say. And she preaches the exact same sermon, word for word, exactly the same. And they think, well, that was a little strange. But they think, well, you know, there are lots of new people, so maybe they didn't hear it the first week, so she did the same thing so that they would all be on the same page. And third Sunday comes, the place is full because they're both curious and impressed at this point. I mean, it's really good. And the third week, she preaches the exact same sermon, word for word. And afterwards, some leaders in the congregation come up to her and they say, Reverend, we're a little confused. You preached the same sermon 3 weeks in a row. And she said, yes. When you get that one, I'll move on to the next one. And I feel a little like that this morning. Not that I feel like you all need remedial education about dismantling white supremacy. So many of you are deeply committed to the work. But I feel like I've preached this sermon before. And I have. I preached it a lot over 9 years. But I woke up Sunday morning with my mind stayed on freedom, and I knew that this is what I had to talk about today. Again. And I don't have anything particularly new to say. Tim got back from Costa Rica on Thursday, and so he picked a choral anthem, one that the pickup choir could do with a little rehearsal one we do recently. I choose love. In the midst of pain, I choose love. It was a song written after the murders of 9 parishioners in Charleston, South Carolina. Like we are a gentle, angry people. It's the right song for right now. It says who we want to be, but it isn't new. And I don't really have anything new to say. Not really. And maybe that's okay. Maybe it isn't about saying something new. Maybe it doesn't need to be new to be important. Maybe the work has been going on for centuries and keeps going on. And we keep at it. Maybe we're called to be like water eroding a mountain of hatred with the force of love. It is slow work. But the water gives life and does the work. And maybe this isn't about a conversion experience where I say a magic word and it all gets better, or I give you the magic word to say in your life and it all gets better like that. Maybe it doesn't work like that. There's no magic solution. It's work. You choose love in the midst of pain, you do it again, you do it again, you do it again, you do it again. And maybe it's exhausting. If you're a person of color, especially, Audre Lorde wonders which of her will survive these liberations, especially if you're a black woman in our country. It's exhausting. So you mourn sometimes. We sat down and wept, says the psalm. We wept. We mourn for Heather Heyer and for Tamir Rice and Michael Brown and so many names. Like a generation before, we mourned for Viola Liozzo and Jimmie Lee Jackson and Medgar Evers and James Reeb and Dr. King and for names known and unknown. People who fought for freedom and who died at the hands of white supremacy. You mourn. And then you pick yourself up and you do work. You choose love again and again and again. You find people who will do the work with you. You laugh together, you dance together, you learn to trust each other, you educate yourself, you rest, you love your kids and the earth and good food, and you just try. You might sometimes be tempted to eat a whole cake. But you resist that temptation. You don't withdraw. You do the work. You don't outsource the work to young people of color. You follow their lead and join in the work. You choose love. You take down that old fence. Not someday somebody will. You do. Today. You do it again. I don't have something new to say, but maybe church isn't about something new to say. Some of you have been coming to worship at this church for 9 decades. You keep coming, though I can hardly imagine you hear much that's really all that new. Maybe that's not the point. Maybe every religion in the world calls their followers to gather in regular ritual and worship, daily, weekly acts of devotion and service because of how easy it is to forget. Not because they have something new to say, but because they have a task to call us to again, to recovenant, to rebind, to re-ligament. That's what religion, re-ligament, means, to reconnect. So I'll tell you something. I tried to write this sermon on Friday, and I went through each point. I did that who, when, what, where, how, why sort of thing. A few paragraphs about each piece of this and concrete things to do. And then I went to City Market, and I saw some of you there. And I thought about this sermon, and I decided I hated it. I reread it Saturday after my run, and I decided I still hated it. I like the intro, which is what I've just given for you, but the rest of it stank. It was not good. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give you the whole point-by-point thing, so let's cut to the chase. Who? You. All of us. When? Now. Always, but also right now. Where? Here. Wherever you are, and here is good. What? Love. Love the hell out of the world. How? Love. Love the hell out of the world. Why? Love. Love the hell out of the world. All of us, now, here, love, love, love. So I'm gonna leave the manuscript here, and I wanna tell you some stories. I'm just gonna leave it behind, because it's not good. So I'm gonna tell you some stories. Okay, if I step down here, I'm gonna do this differently. I'm gonna tell you a story about Augustus Conant. Some of you will recognize that name. Augustus Conant was a farmer. He was good with his hands. He did all kinds of things, and he was also a Unitarian minister. And he left the city of Chicago, and he went to the wild, wild west in the 1840s, the city of Geneva, Illinois. It was not then a suburb of rich corporate executives. It was a small town in the midst of cornfields and wheat fields and prairie. And he preached the Unitarian gospel in the 1840s and the 1850s. And in exchange, he received from his parishioners chickens and hay and other things that they farmed. I don't need live chickens, that's okay. He's a good preacher. And he also went once a month up to Elgin to preach at the Unitarian Church that he helped get started there in Elgin. He preached, and he was convicted that slavery was wrong. It was 1850. We've been hearing this week about men of their times, right? Oh, those statues of Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee and the rest, they were men of their times. They were, you know, men of honor. We have to excuse their commitments to slavery and oppression because they were men of their times. Well, Augustus Conant was a man of his times, and he preached from the pulpit that slavery was wrong, that it was a sin, that it was evil, that to hold your brothers and sisters, your siblings, all other children of God in bondage was wrong, a sin. And he was a man of his times. So is Frederick Douglass, and Harriet Tubman was a woman of her times. These people opposed slavery at the time. So I'm not interested in the man of their times excuse. Well, Augustus kind of preached this sermon in Geneva, and after a while, the people in Geneva came to him and they said, Reverend, could you be a little less political? It's sort of divisive. Some of us aren't so sure that we want to break apart the union with this stance, and can't we all just get along, and can't you see both sides, and why are you doing this, and it's too much, always calling it evil and wrong and a sin. Well, he said, sorry, I'm going to preach that it's a sin because it's a sin. Slavery is wrong. And they said, why don't you go find another pulpit? So he did. He came here. He was the minister of the church in Rockford. And Rockford was an anti-slavery town in the 1850s, and the reason for that was that the laborers here, their wages were undercut by free labor from slavery. It was an economic reason, but he didn't preach an economic message from the pulpit. He preached a moral message that slavery was wrong, that it was wrong to hold other human beings, beloved by God, in bondage. And it seems like a long time ago when he preached that message. There was a story this week where a journalist interviewed folks, rural people of color, in places and asked them what their experience had been. They told stories of their neighbors who they thought were their friends saying to them after the election, well, I guess it won't be long before I own you then. They did not say that in jest. People who are alive now had great grandparents who were held in slavery. So he preached that message. It was sin. It was wrong. And in 1861, he enlisted as a chaplain in the Union Army. He was much older than the soldiers. And he went and he served them, and he heard their stories and prayed for them and died in the war. It says of overexertion, but it was probably tuberculosis. And I think about what Augustus Conant would say if he was the minister of this church now, not 150 years ago. I think he would preach a pretty radical message to dismantle the structures of white supremacy and slavery, modern-day slavery, the prison industrial complex, systems of oppression and domination. He would call us and challenge us. And some people would say, don't be so political all the time. If he was here, he would, as I have, found a congregation that expects that, not is unsure about. It's one story. Second story is about me. It's a personal story, a little bit. It's a story about privilege, and it's a story about police. And I know that can be a touchy subject, but I want to tell you this story. I grew up on the end of a cul-de-sac in the suburbs. White guy, middle class, well-educated, right there in the sweet spot of privilege. It was my experience. And I went off to college in a very small town and a liberal arts college, and my senior year of college, four friends and I, we rented a house. And there was a tradition about this house. It was sort of the independent fraternity, if you will. If you rented this house, it was your job to throw parties for the whole school. 1,300 students, our guest list was about 300. And we would all come, and my friend Andy was the DJ, and I did the invitation list, and I mixed the drinks, and my friends Layla and Juliana, who lived in the house with us, they made the decorations and made sure people danced, and all this, it was great. But inevitably, at the parties, the police would roll up. And they would say, we got a noise complaint from across the way, and I would think to myself, it's Friday night on a college campus. You live a block away. What did you expect? But I would always be the negotiator. I would go out and I would talk to them and would say, okay, we'll turn it down, and we'd tell people to come in from the backyard, and then they would roll away. They were cops in a college town, small town. It was my job. That's what I did. So the summer after I graduated from college, the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, our big national meeting, was in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I was one of the leaders of the young adult community, the late teens, 20s, sort of group, and one night, a bunch of us decided to go across the street to the park. It was late, and we were going to play Ultimate Frisbee. We were 22-year-old Unitarian Universalists. We're going to play Ultimate Frisbee in the park. And so we went, and we were playing around and talking, and a police officer rolls up. And he says, excuse me, and I step forward. Others in the group step back. I'm used to negotiating. And I had a leadership role in the group, and I noticed that some of the folks in our group began to cry. They were scared. Away from home, didn't know what was going to happen. The people of color in our group, there were not very many, but there were a few, they stepped way into the back. And I stepped forward, and I said, "What's the problem?" He said, "Well, the park is closed." I said, "Oh, we didn't know that. We didn't see a sign. We're at the hotel across the street. We'll go, we'll leave." He said, "Well, I need to see everybody's ID." And I said, "Oh, well, we came to play Frisbee, and we left our IDs in the hotel, our wallets and our purses. We just came to have fun. We don't have them with us." He said, "Well, I need to see everybody's ID. It's the law in Utah that you have to have your ID with you on at all times." And I said, "I thought this was the United States, not Soviet Russia." I tell that story, and the people of color who are my friends who hear that story think, "You did what?" Because they would not say that. And I said, "You survived that encounter?" And he was not happy with me. And he said, "Well, it's the law. I have to see your ID." And so I said, "Well, I mean, we'll see what we have, but why don't you tell me your name and your badge number so that I can call the Visitor and Convention Bureau tomorrow and tell them how you've treated guests of your city?" And he said, "Well, it's all right, just go on home." And he got back in his car and he drove away. So I tell that story to think about privilege and how those of us who have it in our society can use it to defend others when asked to do so, and how to be aware that if you have a lot of it, as I do, how you're treated is not how everyone else might be being treated. The neighbor of James Fields, who killed Heather Heyer, said, I heard this on the radio, "He was always nice to me." Well, yes, you're white. He was nice to you. So to see how others might see the world. My clergy friends who were on the front lines in Charlottesville last week say that the police were absent. They were not there. When the white supremacists moved in with their bats, their torches, and their fists, into a line of clergy standing in robes and collars, there were no police to stop them. If it hadn't been for the Antifa protesters, they would have probably been killed, some of them, certainly beaten. The Antifa stood in the way. They were gone. A friend of mine in Memphis shared that yesterday when they tried to drape a white cloth over a Confederate statue, peacefully, the police rushed in, beat, knocked an eight-month pregnant woman in the stomach with her elbow. This is the experience that people have. Now, my experience in Rockford is that since the Barmore shooting, things have changed here. But to ask folks to trust one and not the other is difficult. So we want to dismantle the system white supremacy. We have to talk about the rule of law and ask you to keep open eyes and to use your privilege, if you have it, whatever you have, to stand up. Third story. This story isn't about me, and it's not one story, it's lots of stories. And stories about you. Stories about you. Because people asked, what should we do? And I thought, do what you're doing. Some of you are doing the work, because I see you doing the work. I see you hosting gatherings in your home and asking people to talk to each other. I see you creating opportunities for people to tell their stories deeply. I see you teaching. A lot of teachers in Unitarian congregations, including this one. And I see you with classrooms full of children of color. And I see how much you love them. And you care for them. And you know that some are in families that are fabulous and everybody cares for them and they got every chance. And some have no resources at home, parenting not worthy of the name, and you love them and you care for them. Keep doing that. I see you treating people with dignity who come by your counter at the store. I see you volunteering, tutoring, reading, marching, serving.
I don't need to give you a list of the things to do. The things to do are always there. I looked on Friday when I was trying to grade a list for you to give to you with the upcoming events on my Facebook page. There were 5 of them about racial justice in the next 2 weeks. It's a fundraiser about immigration. There's a rally this afternoon at Beattie Park. There's this, there's that. This is not hard. Show up. Learn. If you feel like you don't quite know enough, and I guarantee that every one of us, I certainly feel like this, doesn't know ever enough, look at the author of the reading today, Chuwa Olumu. Look her up, read more, start there. You know what to do, you're doing it. How you raise your children. You wear your button out in public. You strike up a conversation. You make fun of a racist on social media. That doesn't really change anything, but it feels good, and it's okay, I give you permission. You stand up. You look at candidates. You ask questions. You participate. Do that. Be a citizen. Be part of the majority of folks who know that racism is wrong, who know that it has infected your own soul because you can't grow up in this country and it doesn't do that, and you try to pull it out, and you stop yourself, and you do better, and every day you try to do better again. That's what you do. You know what to do. So how do we have the strength to not give up? Well, you come to worship. You go to discussion groups. You make connections with people who hold you accountable. You sing. You pray. You walk in the woods. You celebrate, you dance, you go places where people are together enjoying life and you think this is how it should be. It is not all pain. Yesterday in Boston, of course, a lot of Unitarians in Boston, it's our national headquarters, so like all my friends were posting videos from Boston, 133 white supremacists showed up, 40,000 counter-demonstrators showed up. Now, Boston has its issues. It sometimes thinks itself more holy than it really is. It's got some problems. But this is the majority. Let us not forget. We have to speak up. We have to examine our own lives. If you're in a workplace, ask HR what they're doing about recruitment. If you're retired, find a place to volunteer. Talk to your family. Here at the church, we've got a lot of work to do. We're doing it. We've got to keep doing it. Say yes.
Yes.
When we ask you to reach. We can do this. We come and go together to the land for which we are bound. That land of our dreams and our hopes and our aspirations, where all of the children of the holy, all of the human family is included. That is the land for which we are bound. Let us travel together. Let us sing.